It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. This hour, the big panel hour, our all-star panel here today, talk a little about the top issues. No shutdown. They actually averted the shutdown a couple hours early. I was expecting it around, 11:59. I was expecting it the last second possible. You know, like a good show, 24 ticking down to the final second, the second before it goes off. Oh, crisis averted. So it looks like they actually did something. Very predictable, but kicked the can down the road a little bit. Still didn't raise the debt ceiling, but we got lots to get to on infrastructure, on the January 6th subpoenas that have popped out, the fact that LeBron James got vaccinated, all of that, and a whole lot more. That's why we've got our all-star panel of Rich Ojeda from No Dems Left Behind, Scott Dworkin of the Democratic Coalition, and our great friend Sarah Burris, reporter at Raw Story. Guys, thanks so much for being here.
You're born.
Thanks for having us.
So let's start with crisis averted. Armageddon didn't happen. The end of our economy didn't happen. They got it done, what around 2 o'clock? 2 o'clock in the afternoon?
Yeah,
which is perfect. They can just go to lunch now and then sneak out the back door when nobody's looking.
And I think what they do, they basically just kick the can down to basically what, January the 1st or something like that. And of course, you know, a lot of people need to understand that obviously this is so that we don't go in default. And literally, you know, the Republicans are going to sit here and say that they're not going to raise the debt ceiling, even though we raised it three times under Donald Trump. And oh, by the way, 97% of what we owe on this credit card came from the Donald Trump administration. Only 3% is what is from Joe Biden. So, yeah, you know, I tell you, it amazes me how the Republicans have no problems at all letting the place burn down as long as they have something they can say and blame on the Democrats in 2022.
No, that's absolutely it.
35 traitors voted against. I mean, sorry, 35 senators voted against it. Same thing. 35 Republican senators voted against that. And I just wonder, you know, when they're going to become Americans again, because I just don't understand exactly what their aim is here, because besides shutting down the government and screwing us all out of work and jobs and millions of workers and just hurting everybody and killing people, like that's what it would ultimately do. So I'm very happy that this happened so swiftly.
Yeah. You know,
the country to fail. Like that's the thing that makes me so crazy.
No, it's absolutely it. You know, they're saying, oh, the economy's bad. The economy's bad. How can we possibly make it worse?
Yeah,
exactly.
And you know what? I mean, this could have been truly catastrophic. And look, I say this, you know, I'm retired military and, you know, I'm in the VA system. I mean, if they allow us to basically go in default, that could literally, you know, normally people say, well, the last thing they want to do is piss off the veterans. By going in default, it could literally stop veterans' VA, you know, benefits. And, you know, that's not the path you want to take.
Yeah, and people used to be afraid of senior citizens. And if we went long enough, they might not get their checks. That would really be a problem. Because, again, the economy is really bad, they keep telling us. The economy is horrible. So what they wanted to do is make it worse. Now, we didn't raise the debt ceiling. We're simply just paying the bills a little bit longer to set up the next fight, because they need this constant turmoil, this constant ticking bomb. And I think, and I'm curious what your guys' thoughts on this is just more McConnell stall delay, more change the subject and continue to push off us getting the things done that we need to get done. Sarah, let's start with you.
Yeah, and I think this is also part of Mitch McConnell's ongoing plot to see Joe Biden fail. I mean, he wants to crash the economy so that Joe Biden looks bad. He wants to destroy everything so that Joe Biden looks bad. And the goal is to get more Republicans elected and take back the House and the Senate in 2022. So it's whatever it will take to destroy the country. That's what Mitch McConnell wants. You know, now we have actual bills that could really legitimately help people, and they're bills that actually fund themselves in large part, a little bit of debt. I think it's like, what, like $250 billion or something that would add to the debt. And so somehow all of these Republicans who claim that they're fiscally responsible and they don't want any debt, but they still refuse to actually, you know, pass bills that would collect taxes or tax people that would pay down the debt. And it's just so absurd. It's so Republican of them.
But here again, as we've known, you know, you look from Ronald Reagan forward, they are the party of big debt. You go back and you look at the fact that the Republicans, when they're in power, they run the debt up massively. And then when Democrats come in, then they, oh, we have to talk about austerity. We have to cut. We've got to drag things into the bathtub and drown them because, hey, we've got to protect our rich people, Scott.
During the pandemic, keep that in mind. This is not the Trump shutdown from before. This is during the pandemic right now. We need that money. We need the government to keep on going. Again, lives are at stake. And they're willing to play with people as pawns, including veterans and the military, active duty military. They just don't care. They don't care. They just want to play games because there was no, some of the Republicans actually said it on the record that we want to make Biden look bad. Like, that's the whole reason for this. There is no other reason for this because there is, if you're an American and you actually care about this country, no one wants it to shut down. There was no reason for it whatsoever. So it's disgusting. Yep. It's par for the course, and nobody should vote Republican ever again.
Yeah, and Janet Yellen was right. This is a manufactured crisis. Ted Cruz, I think, laid it out. He said, you know, we're going to get Joe Biden to surrender because he sees paying our bills is something to go to war over. And here, this is the thing, Rich. I don't know how things operate in your house, but I usually, you know, fight over spending money. I don't usually fight over paying the bill after I've already spent the money. And this is what we're really talking about here, which is why I think the debt ceiling is an idiotic construct that needs to be thrown away. We need to fight over spending first, and then we pay our bills when we do spend.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things. That's why it's important that we do our role here and try to educate the people, you know, because I'll tell you right now, once again, when you realize that 97% of the reason why we have to raise the debt ceiling is to pay the bills under the Trump administration. And once again, it was done three times under Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to be upfront and honest with this and let people know what it is, because make no mistake about it, we're going to do what we have to do to, you know, crisis averted. But, you know, I can guarantee you that there's going to come a time when we're going to have to raise the debt ceiling because of all the spending under President Biden, and the Republicans are going to make sure everybody knows about that. They have no problems educating the masses when it benefits them, if it's in their favor. It's time we do that.
But the difference is Democrats will go, yeah, we've got to raise the debt ceiling. They're not going to hold the country hostage to get their pound of flesh like we saw during the Obama term with Screwquester.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, that's what I'm saying. The Republicans, this is a game to them. This is just a big game. And honestly, I'm at the point where I'm like, are you willing to allow this country to burn to the ground just so you can try to say, look, wasn't us, wasn't our fault? You know, at any given time, nobody, you know, if you're a member of Congress, everybody should be willing to meet in the middle and get things done. And what we're seeing right now is pure selfishness and just people that, I mean, literally, it's almost as if they want us to fail so they can have something in 2022 to say, look at how bad they did.
Yeah, this is not about making the country better. This is not investing in the future. This is not about making workers' lives better. This is about scoring cheap political points. And that's really all it's been for the last several years. But Scott, I want to go to you because Joe Manchin today came out and said that he's got, a top line of $1.5 trillion for the Build Back Better plan, which, again, you look at this and you go, we're not paying our bills on this side. Republicans won't let us do this. We need big, chunky investment to help us get more voters in the new year. And you've got the Republicans working against you and Joe Manchin, well, diminishing expectations. This ain't good.
Republican Senator Joe Manchin is, I don't know how else to put it, a disgrace. He actually wants to make an example out of him. So we will, legally. And I'm sick of it. I've been nice about it with him and Sinema. Everybody has. The resistance still exists for the specific reason to push back against our own party, I guess. I don't like the idea of, oh, we can't push against him because we can't win statewide in West Virginia without him. I don't care anymore. He's a Republican. He's an obstructionist. I don't care if he leaves the party at this point. I understand that he votes with us some of the time, but at this point, it's killing people. Yeah. They're killing people.
I got to jump in here. I'm sorry. You know, I listened to him today when I got up this morning, and he said that West Virginia did not need things like roads and bridges. We're 50th out of 50. What the hell's wrong with this guy? We are 50th in infrastructure, and he's going to sit here and say that West Virginia doesn't need broadband? Our kids have to sit in the friggin' parking lot at McDonald's to do their homework because the moment they go up the holler, they lose complete connectivity. What the hell is wrong with this guy? I'm done.
That's because he doesn't drive on those roads, and he doesn't need that broadband access. His neighborhood is fine, thank you very much.
And if you look at his plan, like what he outlined, the things that he wants, he makes it very, very clear who is buying and paying for his campaign. He said that he doesn't want to tax any oil and coal, and he wants to make sure that if we're including that if we're subsidizing electrical vehicles, we have to make sure we have hydrogen in it. And I was like, what? Is there like a whole hydrogen car thing? And then I Googled through that. And I mean, this is the whole thing is just a ridiculous idea. And it's like, okay, well, if your state doesn't need any of this money, then maybe we just shouldn't give you any. I mean, if you're going to play this game, then I guess it seems like you don't actually need any money going to your state if you're not going to going to support it. Like, that's what Republicans would do.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy. And the thing is, you know, the things in the Build Back Better plan are popular. Expanding Medicare, popular. Paid family medical leave, popular. Extending the $500 or the $250 per the tax credit for the kids, very popular. Free community college for kids, very, very popular. All of this stuff, really popular.
Universal pre-K,
you know,
huge.
Throw that stuff huge out there. We can't get it done because of a handful of people.
Yes. We need a real majority. We need to expand to a real majority in the Senate to make Manchin and Sinema irrelevant.
And the thing that's so crazy, I will say too, about this bill is that it's not just Democrats and progressives that support it. Yes, Democrats and progressives support it, but it's like 39% of Republicans are all for it. That's a pretty big chunk of Republican voters who are like, yes. Yes, I want pre-K. Yes, I want paid family leave.
Common sense stuff that helps people. I don't understand. It shouldn't be controversial to help people. It shouldn't be divisive to work together on something. Like, they just want to pick and poke, and they have this fake audience that doesn't really exist. If you look on Twitter and other social media sources, you can see that they're fan base is dying because a lot of them are troll farms. A lot of them, they think they have this kind of support that they do not have. There are not that many anti-vaxxers in this country. There aren't. There's enough to be a problem, annoying, but in reality, they don't exist in mass. That's not a thing. It's a lot of it's foreign entities that are being funded by Russia and China that want to plant that seed in our heads to be like, you know what? You guys should go ahead and they take the bait. They take the bait every single time. And it's stupidity and also willful ignorance where they want to fall in the trap. They want to live in this society where they're against masks and blah, 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 blah. No, most parents want their kids to wear a mask if they're in school. They're nervous about them being in school in the first place. So I don't, it's a lot of Trumpism because they're just sitting there screaming at the top of their lungs, but what they're saying is nothing. They're not saying anything. That's the bottom line there.
So let me ask you on this front, because everybody's on board, it seems, with the, you know, most people I know want the hard infrastructure. It's the reconciliation bill that's getting a lot of the attention, which I would argue the $3.5 trillion that it's now down to is a massive compromise. Because we keep hearing people say, well, we need to compromise to get down to where Joe Manchin is. We've already compromised from the $6 trillion that Bernie Sanders wanted down to $3.5 trillion, and now we're going to go even further. I'm looking at this and going, does Nancy Pelosi move forward on the vote? And if she does, do you think Republicans come along on the hard infrastructure, the quote-unquote bipartisan bill, if for no other reason to tear the Democrats apart on the other side? Let's start with you, Sarah. Thoughts?
Well, there's a whole argument in the House right now where Republicans don't understand that the bills aren't linked together. They think that they're linked together, and they don't understand that they're two separate bills. So all of these Republicans are like, no, we're going to vote down all these roads and bridges because they think that that means that they're voting against, again, paid family leave and paid, you know, free kindergarten and stuff like that. And it's even people in the Senate, Bill Cassidy from Louisiana came out and was like, I don't understand what they're doing. It's all the Republicans are doing in the House. Like, when you have your own senator from a crazy right wing state coming out being like, there's something wrong with y'all in the House. I mean, that's where we are with these people. That's how insane it is.
No, Biden wants it. We can't have it. Rich, your thoughts?
I think that exposes people, but people aren't picking up on it. You know, with these Republicans, I mean, once again, they just want to go into 2022 and give the Democrats nothing. You know, they want to say that they couldn't get anything done, and that's why you need to give us a shot so that we can get it done. You know, that's why it's important that we've got to figure out how to educate these people to basically expose them for the tactics that they are using that's really hurting us, you know, and that's where we are. And it's just really, it's very frustrating.
And yet when they had the opportunity to do things, they didn't do anything. Scott, you want last thought on this?
Yeah, they were coming out against building like internet infrastructure, as Rich said. They're coming out against it on the internet via social media networks. You see the irony there? Like, they're
saying,
we don't need it. We don't need it via Twitter. Like, it's just like insane because that's their tool that they use. And I think kids and families and everybody need access to that, and they don't have it. And so a lot of this is just nonsense and talking points and phrases from the GOP, and it's just their party's going to be in flames, you know?
Interesting stuff, but we'll see how this plays out in the coming days. And look, like I said, this is wildly popular stuff. This is, you know, everybody I talk to, regardless of political affiliation, go, yeah, I want the whole filled out front of my house. Yeah, I want my kids to have the best access to broadband. I want to be able to order my stuff online without everything buffering and going crazy. These are investments that we desperately, desperately need. And yet one party and two Democrats holding all of it up. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back with our all-star panel. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Smith Show.
Here at the Rick Smith Show, we don't accept corporate advertising. Never have, never will. In fact, we spend most of our time giving corporations the finger. We don't stop the show every few minutes to sell you supplements, beet juice, or whatever snake oil the right-wing loonies are pawning. That's because we're not sellouts. It's also because we're supported by our friends in labor and by people like you. If you like what we do, become a patron by going to patreon.com/Rick Smith Show. That's patreon.com/Rick Smith Show. Give what you can, if you can, and help us fight for the working class majority. Because together we bargain, divided we beg. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 2012. That was the day the Chicago Teachers Union walked off the job for the first time in 25 years. The historic week-long strike resonated nationwide among trade unionists and served to reinvigorate the labor movement. Certainly, higher wages and better benefits were among the teachers' demands. The city's mayor, Rahm Emanuel, had canceled the union's wage increase, laid off close to 1,000 teachers, and went on the attack against seniority rights and working conditions. The strike enjoyed wide public support among parents and the public. Teachers emphasized broader educational problems they faced, namely the attacks fueled by corporate privatization. They wanted a return to more traditional forms of education rather than simply preparing students for endless rounds of testing. They wanted more art, music, and gym classes.
and they demanded stable funding for social support services for the most vulnerable at-risk students. Union teachers understood that the Board of Education was using standardized testing to get rid of teachers and schools in order to privatize education, all in the name of turning around failing schools and helping the kids. Though the contract was less than perfect, it showed the power working people have to hold the line against continued assaults on their standards of living, especially in the public sector. The CTU was able to beat back attempts at merit pay and increased use of student test scores in teacher evaluations. They won first-time recall rights, supply reimbursements, and liberal arts classes. There were concessions, however, made on seniority rights, pay for laid-off teachers, and longer workdays. But the CTU demonstrated that strikes can win in a period of extended anti-union onslaughts. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we've been seeing the stories coming out about the January 6th criminals. In fact, this week, the swimmer, the Olympic swimmer, he pled guilty to charges and is going to cooperate, obviously probably seeking a more lenient sentence. And this is the thing that's been really frustrating to me, because I think there should be maximum sentences. We should be sending people to jail, real jail, not a couple weekends here, a couple weekends there. I mean, actual jail. You committed crimes. Time for you to go away. Lots of light sentences. Oh, I was caught up in the frenzy of the moment. Oh, I was caught up in the moment. Oh, the crowd. Oh, mob mentality. No, no, no. And the question that I have for our all-star panel is, do these light sentences that these judges are handing out and our prosecutors are moving to the judges with, is this just another way to, help the Republicans reframe that criminal day as, hey, it was no big deal, walk in the park. Look, the sentences aren't all that great. That's why I've asked our panel to stick around and talk a little bit about it. Guys, thanks for taking time for us. Scott, let's start with you. Thoughts? I mean, does this frame it in a way that, hey, it's no big deal? Guy got 45 days in jail for taking a dump somewhere.
I mean, I think there should be harsher penalties for even entering the building in the first place. But I think they're going to make an example out of other people. And some of those people are going to have to go to trial. Those trials will be next year before the midterm elections. This is not going to work out for them. This is also not the only people who will be indicted from this. I talked to some people who work with the Select Committee, and we're looking at another 100 indictments, at least, at the minimum. That was 100.
Good, we need it. So,
yeah, I mean, and those people, the organizers, the funders, and things like those are felonies. So I would say, about a quarter of these people are facing 10 or more years in prison for serious felonies, for assaulting police officers. And also, some of these people still haven't been found. There's a lot of things going on. Obviously, 15 subpoenas have been sent out. They're going to send out at least dozens. And keep in mind, this is after them asking these people to turn over information that they probably already have, cell phone information, data, and whatnot. But they're asking for this information, and they deny it, the request. So they sent out 11 subpoenas yesterday. They sent out 4 subpoenas to Trump's inner circle. They're going to subpoena his family, because I'm guessing they're refusing. They're also going to subpoena members of Congress and their staff. Nothing is off limits. I don't know what they're going to do with Trump, because that's just, they don't want to make a big deal about subpoena for him, because he's going to fight it, and that's going to be a little bit weird how it's handled. So they may not waste time with that yet. But they're looking to end this by the early next year, which means that they may be referring indictments to the DOJ shortly for people. I know that in the next few weeks or whatnot, people could be indicted by the DOJ for ignoring subpoena requests. They are going to enforce every single subpoena. They are very well aware of everyone's impression of subpoenas. Keep in mind, this is not Trump's DOJ. This is not Trump's White House. And there will be nobody protecting them from there. And Biden is on board with supporting the Select Committee all the way. There may be light sentences to start with, but this is the first and second inning. This is the early on. These are the people who made very bad choices and went and followed the cult inside the Capitol. These are not the people who brutally assaulted police officers. These are not the people who planned a conspiracy against the United States of America. These are not the people who funded the event. And these are not the people who should spend the rest of their life in prison, which are the organizers of the event who intended for it to be violent. So we've got a lot of people down the pike, and it's not going to be pretty for them. And it's all going to be before the midterm elections here. So the truth is going to come out, and they're going for the jugular as they should. So it's just, it's a TikTok situation. And I know that people would be like, oh, I've heard it all before, but no, this is different. This is a Biden White House, and this is a DOJ that Biden does not control. It's a DOJ independently. But at the same time, he's not going to let them protect any of these members of Congress and anybody who worked in the White House previously. At the same time, any of those communications at the White House turned it over to the Select Committee. They had those communications. Other private communications will also be turned over. They're going to have access to everything. Every major corporation is complying. So I don't know exactly what their plan is, but they don't need everyone to testify and everyone to comply. But at the same time, they are going to enforce these subpoenas. I mean, this is a bad situation for the Republican Party. They got to get out in front of this, and the only way is to comply.
Oh, and look, we're talking two different things. You're talking about the committee's investigation and the subpoenas. I'm talking about the people who are going to jail right now, the people who are been arrested, they're being charged. And Rich, maybe you'll come along with me on this. I'm looking at these, 45-day sentences, these taps on the wrists, because the people that I'm talking to in the streets are like, well, they're getting nothing for trying to overthrow our democracy, for trying to stop the election from being certified. This is a real crime. This is different than breaking a couple of windows or stealing a pair of tennis shoes. This is about destroying our democracy, and all they're getting for it is a weekend pass somewhere and a fine and a tap on the wrist and a promise not to do it again.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of this at all. I will tell you that, if you walk through a broken door, then as far as I'm concerned, you might as well have broken that door. The same thing with the broken windows. That's the hallowed ground. If you were in that building and you were wearing a ballistic helmet, a military freaking helmet, or you were wearing a flak vest, the way I look at it, you come there ready for war, and you need to be held accountable for that. Now, I know right now they're hitting the people that just basically walk through the front doors and stuff like that. I do believe that as time goes by, they're going to start to get the worst of the worst. The guy that was bashing people with the hockey stick, I've heard as much as 60 years he could be facing. Look, I want to see all these people go down, but I'm with you. I don't want nobody to get a slap on the wrist. I want these people to go down, because this needs to send a message. Because if you don't, this could happen again. Yep. This was nothing but treason. And yep, I want to see the people who gave the tours to go down. I want to see, I want to know what Donald Trump was doing when he said he's going to go with them and he went the other way. I want to know that stuff too. But I think that what these people did on January the 6th, they should be held accountable for the entire event. They struck the flag of the United States of America from our nation's capital and replaced it with the Trump flag. They let a man walk through the halls of Congress with a rebel flag. Everybody that was there, to me, you're all guilty of the same thing. To me, everybody should be held to the same standard. And I mean, put all of them away. I don't give two shit.
And I'm not trying to downplay it at all. I just want to clarify, I believe that I've told the DOJ that I've told people this, that anybody who stepped in the building should spend at least a decade in prison, if not more. But I'm looking at the reality of it. And this is the reality as right
no,
now.
No. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because the narrative that's being spun, Sarah, and maybe you've got a thought on this, is that, it's not a big deal. The Republican congressmen are going, if you wouldn't have known it was January 6th, it looked like any other day. And we're seeing these light sentences, probation in some cases, 45 days. It's I think, reinforcing that narrative is, wasn't a big deal.
I think that narrative is going to keep going. And then once we start getting into, severe sentences, that narrative is going to fall apart, and it will fall apart closer to the election, which politically is better for us. Scott is right, though. Legally, breaking in and entering is one crime. Entering is something else. And so legally, you have to look at the difference between those two. And there, I mean, it's if Scott's right about the additional 100, that means we're going to have 760 plus people who have been indicted. There's been like, what, 90, maybe 95 who have pled guilty so far. That leaves a heck of a lot of people left. And I think that they're looking at those people who, you know, were doing the selfies, the woman in Kansas who broke down crying in court this week. You know, there were no pictures of her breaking anything or taking a dump on the floor. It was just her wrapped in a flag, you know, taking a bunch of photos of herself. And so, I mean, that alone already, basically she's getting more than a slap on the wrist. And it's enough to freak her out. But I think too, if any of these people ever did anything like this again, they're done. Like, this is not, it's one of these things where like, okay, we've broken into the Capitol and we've, you know, torn some stuff up. But if this ever happens again, if you're ever convicted of a misdemeanor again or a felony again, this follows you.
Yeah. Anybody and else buying the light treason argument that I'm getting? I'm getting a light treason here, Sarah.
Well, then I think that there absolutely should be treason charges. There should be sedition charges because we have basically proven that this was absolutely intended to be a takeover of the government. We have the memo, the Trump coup memo makes it, I mean, they wrote it all out. It's in 2 pages and it has several points planned. And so I think that gives you the license to start charging people with treason and sedition. I don't know why the FBI is not doing it. I would love for them to.
Scott, let's go to you because, you know, you got this 2-page memo that came out. Very digestible, you know, short paragraphs so that the former guy could read it. Kind of Bush-esque, I thought. But, you know, I read through it and I'm going, you know, this is, it sent chills down my spine at how methodically they laid it out and they've well gamed all this stuff. None of it was new. They trial ballooned it, all of it, in November and December. But the fact that it was just written out with the kind of clarity and forethought that the most powerful man in the country was thinking this, I got to tell you, it sent chills down my spine.
This was not an attempted coup. This was a failed coup. This was a true coup. The election, which is legitimate by definition, I don't see it as any other way. Their intention was for their own supporters to be hurt that day so that he could shut down the government or shut down everything at that moment. You know, they wanted people to get hurt. Their intention was to overthrow the government. They wanted to stall the count so that he could stay in power and then it'd be muddy waters and he just stays in power and Biden's sort of president, but not really in the White House. And Trump is still in the White House. And I guess on January 20th, he probably would have been dragged out of there. But like, it still was, it's so damaging. But the people who did the damage were in the White House. They were next to him. Those are the people who need to be arrested in a perp walk. I am not defending anyone that was even there that day. I've used the word traitor more than anyone else in the country probably. But like I don't misuse it either. I would say that the folks that kind of it would be easier if they were charged later on or if they were tried later on. After we had the information from the January 6th Select Committee, once we had that information, then we'll look at those people differently. It's not, yeah, they may have gotten off light, but that will follow them forever. They will look like Nazis in the eyes of our children forever. These are not people that will be liked forever. It's ingrained on their tombstone. Like this is them forever. So I think there's a bigger sentence than just that. I do believe in harsh sentences for this as well. Now, keep in mind, federal probation is no picnic either, and they can easily go to prison again, and they've obviously kept some people on remand as well. But they are treating people differently because they're white, bottom line, because they're white. That's why. And I think it's grotesque and it's disgusting. But I look at the reality of the situation. I think that that memo and everything else that we'll have, the evidence that I see right now is that it was a coup and it failed. And it failed because we fought back. And Speaker Pelosi is one of the leaders of that. I don't think Pence didn't want to go back in there. McConnell didn't want to go back in there. They wanted to stall. They're in on it. All of these people need to be arrested. Like, this is not a joke. This is not jargon. This is not me being political. This is people committing treason, trying to overthrow our government. And everybody needs to be held accountable. And the people who need to be arrested at the top of it have not been yet. And they should, they must. And I'm going to demand it, and everybody else should. And I think the evidence will prove it to be so.
Yeah. Rich, let me go to you, because, you know, we're seeing basically the rewrite of the day. And, you know, I'm getting emails all the time from people going, you know, Ashley Babbitt is a martyr. And I can see down the road, you know, them, you know, trying to erect a monument with all the people who have been found guilty or pled guilty, as we're going to make them martyrs and in some kind of weird Confederate way. How do you see this playing out going down the road?
I think that everybody needs to be completely educated on all of the facts, things that went on behind the scenes. The American people need to know this, because once they know this and they get all of the information, then I believe they're going to admit that this was nothing more than a failed coup. And that's what it was. You know, I tell you, people in my circle, as military, as far as your Ashley Babbitt, you know, Ashley Babbitt, I respect her service. You know, she's a 14-year Air Force veteran that served in Iraq. But the moment that she stepped foot on our soil in our capital, she become a treasonous traitor. You know, and I'll tell you right now, that guy that squeezed the trigger on her did exactly what he had to do. Had she got past him, who knows what could have happened. If she would have got past him and opened that door and said, "Hey, they're in here." You know, those people running around with those zip tie handcuffs, they wasn't wearing those for looks. They were wanting to go in there and absolutely take hold of members of Congress. And you had people that have said, people that have been arrested, that even listed on social media, that they just wanted to basically murder, you know, Nancy Pelosi on the House floor. So we cannot take this lightly. These people need to be held accountable. And I'm hoping to see some of these people go down forever. And like Scott said, if the truth gets out, none of these people who participated in this are ever going to walk around and be able to say, "I was there." They're going to do everything in their power to make sure that nobody knows that they were there.
I hope
that's the best way.
I hope so. Sarah, 30 seconds. Your last thought?
Yeah, well, one of the things that Scott didn't mention is that it's not just the charges. Like, anybody, any job that they ever work for ever again, somebody, if they Google them, that's the first thing that's going to come up. So this will follow them forever.
So there, you're going with the black scar that they're going to have forever and going to follow them. And look, they deserve it. You know, they broadcast their treason. They've wore the treason proudly. They should wear it around their neck. Guys, going to take a quick break right here. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. You missed any portion of our program, make sure you check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, at Rick Smith Show. Facebook, give us a like. Subscribe over at YouTube. Maybe share a couple of them. And if there's a topic you want to hear, let us know. Quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That was the day that began the Elaine Massacre. The massacre took place in Arkansas, where more than 100 black farmers and sharecroppers were gunned down for daring to organize their labor. The year before, a black farmer by the name of Robert L. Hill had founded the Progressive Farmers and Household Union of America. Union members pooled their money to purchase land. They also hired a lawyer to sue planters who did not give black tenant cotton farmers their fair share of the profits. The group grew in membership in the Arkansas Delta region, including near the town of Elaine in Phillips County. But white landowners would not allow this challenge to their power. Armed white militias came to a church where the union was holding a meeting. The black attendees were also armed. Gunfire broke out. In response, white posses and federal troops unleashed a wave of terror across Phillips County. Hundreds of black residents were arrested. At least 100 black Arkansans were killed. Some estimates of those murdered is considerably higher. 5 white people also died. 122 black men and women were charged with murder. 12 were given the death sentence. No white vigilante, however, was ever charged. The convicted African-Americans appealed their cases. One appeal for six of the defendants went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, where it was overturned in a landmark ruling. The year of 1919 was one of the deadliest years of violence against African-Americans in U.S. history. Civil rights activist James Weldon Johnson called those bloody months the Red Summer. 26 race riots left thousands of African-Americans homeless and hundreds dead from Chicago to Washington, D.C. to Omaha. Here at the Rick Smith Show, we don't accept corporate advertising. Never have, never will. In fact, we spend most of our time giving corporations the finger. We don't stop the show every few minutes to sell you supplements, beet juice, or whatever snake oil the right-wing loonies are pawning. That's because we're not sellouts. It's also because we're supported by our friends in labor and by people like you. If you like what we do, become a patron by going to patreon.com/Rick Smith Show. That's patreon.com/Rick Smith Show. Give what you can, if you can, and help us fight for the working class majority. Because together we bargain, divided we beg. Thank you for tuning in.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the big news this week, LeBron James evidently wrapped up his research. I wonder if he was watching YouTube on the toilet and got enough research. But he has been vaccinated, he says. Goes on to say that we should everyone do their own research and all of that stuff. Ted Cruz, on the other hand, is standing with the handful of NBA players who are the anti-vax crowd. And you would expect that, wouldn't you? But I think finally, you know, I think LeBron James did the right thing, came out publicly, said that he's conducted his research. I'd love to have that reading list. I'd like to know what that was. Maybe just his contract that said you don't get paid if you don't play in certain arenas. Just a thought. But here to share some thoughts on the vaccine mandate. And, you know, on the LeBron side, off the side, should Kyrie Irving have to be vaccinated? Our all-star panel of Scott Dworkin from the Democratic Coalition, Rich Ojeda from No Dems Left Behind, and, of course, our good friend Sarah Burris of Raw Story. Guys, thanks for sticking around.
Well, you bet.
So let's look at LeBron. He's come out. I think he's done the right thing. A little late. I wish it would have been sooner. But let's start with you, Sarah. Good thing, bad thing, doesn't it matter?
Yes, I will take anybody who comes to the realization that they should be vaccinated. The funny thing about Ted Cruz is I wonder how long Ted Cruz is going to support those guys when they start taking a knee during the national anthem. I wonder if that's going to continue. But yeah, I think hopefully LeBron will... You know, his stature will help influence some other players. I think the associations to be saying that you have to be vaccinated to play, I think that's really important because, like, you're in these guys' face. So you're not, this isn't just about, oh, I'm getting vaccinated for me and this isn't about anybody else. If you're playing and sweating and breathing all over each other, you're putting other people in danger if you haven't been vaccinated.
Yeah, but I understand the Players Association has come out not in favor of vaccine mandates. I don't know that the NBA has said anything. This is coming out of New York City saying you just can't play.
And it's interesting because the NFL Players Association seems like they're a little bit wavering on that. So I wonder if it's like, you know, maybe it just depends on the sport for players. The other unions are not acting like that. The teachers union came out for vaccines. So it's weird to have so many different associations being like, oh, we're going to protect our members so they die.
Yeah. But here again, this is, I bring this back. This is because New York says everybody who plays in the Barclays Center or Madison Square Garden, you've got to be vaccinated or you don't play. And the reason, you know, Rich, this is coming up is you get this Kyrie Irving guy who's saying, you know, respect my privacy. No, not in this moment. Normally I'm with you on the privacy angle, but this is a public health emergency.
It is. And you know what? I mean, it's only taken you 2 years to finally do the right thing. I mean, at the end of the day, I think it's time in this country, you know, first off, nobody's lying. Nobody's blowing smoke up people's backsides. We're in the midst of a global pandemic and millions of people have died. I think we've already crossed the 700,000 death mark in the United States of America. I mean, it's purely selfish for anybody to fight these things. And at the end of the day, you know, it's, to be an athlete and to not want to do the right thing to protect those around you, that's pure selfishness. It makes me absolutely want to turn the knob off and not pay attention to any of these people that are fighting this garbage.
Yeah, but
do
here's
the right thing.
But here's the thing, Scott, and I look at this as, you know, we've been seeing the headlines that this is such a big thing. There, a hospital system in North Carolina fired 175 workers in the largest mass firing in the history of civilization. And then you go down and you read the story. Out of 35,000 employees in Delaware, same thing. The 150 lost their jobs out of 10,000. You look at the fact that overwhelmingly the vast majority of people are going, yeah, I want to protect myself. And in healthcare, I want to protect my patients. It's these handfuls. It's the Kyrie Irvins. It's the handfuls that are the fly in the ointment here. So how do we deal with them? I mean, is this a moment where you go, there's the door, which I believe, or is there another way?
I mean, that's the same thing where a bunch of state troopers were going to plan on resigning in Massachusetts. And then it turns out one resigned over the vaccine mandate. Everyone else got vaccinated. I guess they didn't want to accept the job offer, Christy Noem. You know, you're either pro COVID or you're anti COVID. There's no in between. It's one or the other. If you have sentiment that sows doubt, then you are pro COVID. This is a life or death emergency. And so if maybe Kyrie Irving spent all his time at home and never left and never interacted with any human being ever, then it would be private. It would be a private matter, but he's a public figure. He has a responsibility to the world to actually have some kind of, I guess, like LeBron. LeBron's timing is awesome. I really appreciate the timing because right now we need someone to hammer home. And so, like, I think LeBron did the right thing. I don't know when he got vaccinated and, like, decided all these things, but he's rich enough to isolate himself and also require everyone around him to be vaccinated and wear a mask. And he's you know, he's a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar entity, you know what I mean, himself, his body. So, like, they treat that as a fortress. So that's a little different. It's not like he's struggling and going on the subway every day in public transit. So he has the money to do that. Not everybody does. Anybody who doesn't want to take care of other people should not have a role in public service or in hospitals or anywhere, really. And everybody has the right. Every corporation has the right to fire anybody for not complying. Because if they're against that, you have to question their motives with other things as well. But just looking at it face value, it's just stupidity. Yeah. There's people buying into propaganda and brainwashing that shouldn't be there. But everybody, same thing with these venues. You wonder why the venues are banning them. It's because the owners are pushing the venues to have these mandates with vaccines. So the owners aren't to blame. So the owners aren't the one that they're pointing out, you know, oh, the owner banned it. They support the vaccine mandate, blah, 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 blah. And it was the same thing with NFL. Like, they all want to be mandate, but they don't want to say the word mandate. Like, it's stupid. It's just propaganda, and they want to play to the base of Trump or whatever it is so they don't piss these people off and so people don't storm into their restaurants they own or whatever. And it's just fear. But I think Biden's got the right idea where it's just you hammer home vaccine mandate, you keep on saying the words out loud. And eventually people will acquiesce. And if they don't, they'll be isolated in society and it won't be welcome anywhere.
Yeah. And I look at this, you know, Sarah, where I started at, you know, months ago. I said, look, if our government can't figure this out, if we're not big boys and girls to figure this out, capitalism ultimately will decide. And, you know, there's part of me that goes, you know, part of LeBron's come to Jesus moment was, hey, it's about the money. And some of these others are going to be brought to that as well. A lot of the, as you said, in Massachusetts, a lot of the state troopers were, yeah, a lot of rhetoric. But when cash came to the wallet, they were going. And ultimately, you know, the thing that bothers me is this whole thing has been, it seems to be about the money when we could have very easily simply just got the vaccine and been moving forward. And you find all of these people who are making a fortune off of telling people who don't want to get the vaccine that you can use bear bile or you know, beet juice or whatever as the miracle cure. And they're making millions. And I look at these America's frontline doctors people who Anonymous hacked their stuff and revealed that they're making millions of dollars off of selling quackery.
Yeah, it's like, I'm surprised that Donald Trump isn't selling Donald Trump's magic fairy dust for, you know, as a cure for COVID at this point. That seems like something he would totally brand and offer from his store, along with, you know, or Rick DeSantis. That seems totally on brand for him as well.
Yeah, well, that would be a horrible thing because none of that stuff sold. So if you're coming out with Trump's COVID cure, it's not going to sell. It's going to be like the Trump vodka or the steaks.
Well, that sold. That sold, Rick. That did sell. He sold a lot of Trump vodka in Russia somehow. I'm not sure how, but millions worth. Just FYI.
But, yeah, this is something where I feel like the best part of the free market is that, you know, the free market is going to deliver results.
Yep.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Here comes then the next question. You know, Biden has come out and said, we're going to have this mandate. I'm going to use it through Medicare and Medicaid. If a hospital doesn't get their people vaccinated, you're not going to get Medicaid and Medicare money. They've said, we're going to use the federal government to do this. Going to issue a temporary emergency ruling through OSHA. All good stuff. My problem, Rich, is what happens when they do sue, and they're going to, and take it in front of this Supreme Court, who seems to be, well, unpredictable at the moment at best.
I mean, I don't know what the Supreme Court's going to do, but at the end of the day, my thing is that we've got to do everything in our power to get this nation vaccinated, because if we don't, we continue basically going through these shutdowns. It continues to mutate and get even stronger. You know, if Delta variant is COVID-19 on steroids, what is the next one going to be? And, you know, we don't want to take that route. You know, other countries are taking this seriously. Right now, I think we're the laughing stock of the globe right now because of how we are allowing so many people to push nonsense, you know, and just try to say the things that they say. All I'm saying is that we've got to put our foot down and save this country. And I don't care if you're a person that wants to just go down the ivermectin route. You know, there comes a time when we got to have somebody that says, you know what, we've got to protect everybody in this country from that guy. And the way we do that is making vaccines mandatory.
Yeah, and we know who he is, because he got the stains to show it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just, I see, I'm watching people talk about, you know, getting out of the military because of the shots and all that stuff. That's absolute pure garbage.
Has it happened? I mean, let me ask you that. Has that happened? Because I've seen the TikTok videos of all these people. I'm leaving. Can you just leave? When I was a kid, the idea of just leaving the military was not something that was really a possibility. Can you just leave?
Well, right now they're basically saying that if you don't get vaccinated, you're going to be discharged. Now, make no mistake about it. They should be receiving a dishonorable discharge. But we save the dishonorable discharges for the worst of the worst crimes. So these people will probably end up getting a general discharge, which requires, like, after 5 years, you have to put in writing a request to have your discharge upgraded. You only get one shot at that. But at the end of the day, nobody had a problem when you joined the military, when you went to the in-processing center and basic training, because you took like 10 shots. And that's a fact. When you become an officer and you went to your officer basic course, you had to go through the in-processing and you got your 10 shots. If you went to Korea, you had to go through the anthrax cycle. If you went to Iraq, you had to get smallpox. Nobody had a problem with these shots. Nobody said anything about these shots. This right now is giving people that probably were mediocre soldiers at best the ability to say, I'm out. And you know what? Good. We don't need you anyway. We can do far better without you.
So let me ask you this, Scott, because you're the social media guru here. Not that Rich, you're not. But YouTube has said, Sarah, you're better than I am, too. Everyone's better than I am on social media. YouTube has said they're pulling all the stuff down of the anti-vaxxers. And you had said earlier, they're a very small number, but they're really loud, especially on a platform like YouTube. Are you in favor of that kind of censorship, or is this not a censorship issue to you?
It's not a censorship. It's something that should have never happened in the first place. It's been out of control. You shouldn't have to delete a million videos that are complete disinformation. It's beyond the pale. Like, even the sowing doubt, it's not opinion when you're like, oh, well, I heard that this hurt my friend or whatever. Like, you're telling a story or a lie that could kill people. Like, that's the bottom. Like, people are getting killed because of this stupidity. And it's different than censorship. It's like a vaccine mandate. It's sometimes you have to do something for the greater good. And this is one of those things. The greater good is like, oh, okay. Maybe it's like yelling fire in a movie theater. People saying, well, I don't know about this vaccine. It's like, shut the F up and just sit down. It's not your time. If you want to complain about it with your friends in private and whatnot, great. You should have no public space for whatsoever, because all you're doing is killing people. All you're doing is hurting people, helping you spread the disease. Obviously, I think some of these people are just scared of needles. As Rich had mentioned about the military, a lot of these people with the videos were not real members of the military. And that was another thing. They were just committing fraud, acting like they were members of the military, or they were vets who acted like they were active duty and they were not. So a lot of these things get debunked over time, but it's that initial pump out there that needed to be stopped. And we're going to find out very, very quickly that social media companies are responsible for a lot of the death in America. They killed people. And that's not something they can take back.
Yeah, to me, this is kind of like if you knew there was an alligator in a pond, you shouldn't be allowed to send people to go swimming. And that's kind of like the path that we're going down right now with these people.
But if you knew there was an alligator in the pond and you still went, should we care about you? I mean, because this is where I'm at. This is the weird spot that I'm in. I'm in the spot where I'm ready to go. Okay, if you didn't get vaccinated, we know now this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. I'm of the mindset going, you made a choice. There are consequences to the choice. You lost your job or you died. That's your call.
I don't want to pay for your health care. Yeah, yeah.
If we see them walking into the water and there's a crocodile there, I don't care if it's Donald Trump. Well, I don't care if it's most people wearing a red hat or not. I don't want them to go in there because I don't want them to die. I don't want that croc to get a taste for other people and kill someone in my family. It's vaccine mandates are investments in America. And that's how we need to think about it. It's not mandatory. So that, like, there are so many mandates that we have. Oh, we got to get rid of the stop sign mandate. We got to get rid of the seatbelt mandate. We got to get rid of the, oh, I'm going to be in an airplane and I can't get in the cockpit. What's the deal? You're banning me from the cockpit? I can't go in there. I can't get my little pin from Delta. Like, it doesn't make any sense. A lot of this is hysteria that's blown out of proportion through advertisements on social media that are paid for by either Trump or foreign investors that want to cause chaos in America, that want to kill Americans. And the easiest way to kill Americans is not through a terrorist attack. It's not through even a domestic terrorist attack. It's through social media and driving this disinformation that kills people via COVID. And that is what's hurting us the most. And so we have to think of this as an investment in America. It's costing us too much money. We need to stop this madness. And the only way to stop it is to just look at everything and delete all this crap.
There you go. And that's where we'll leave this, guys. I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff. Sarah Burris, Raw Story, Scott Dworkin, Democratic Coalition, Rich O'Donnell, No Dem Left Behind. Thanks, guys. Look forward to the next panel. Thanks so much.
Get vaccinated.
Get vaccinated. And if you missed any of today's program, TheRickSmithShow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast, The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go, wherever you go. And always, as always, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. You got any thoughts, questions, comments? We'd love to hear it. Make sure you follow us on social media, at Rick Smith Show on Twitter. Get us over on Facebook, YouTube, all of those places. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I want to take a second to tell you about our friends over at the Political Voices Network. PVN is a new network dedicated to promoting left-leaning voices like The Stephanie Miller Show, The Tom Hartman Program, Richard French Live, and of course, The Rick Smith Show. To find these great shows and lots of other great content, go to politicalvoicesnetwork.com and help us pull the plug on the corporate-controlled mainstream media. And as always, thank you for your support.